Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gigabit Nation, Broadband Talk Radio. I'm your host, Craig Settles, and I want to welcome everyone here in the audience today. Thank you for taking time to be with us. And, of course, a big shout-out goes to our sponsor, Hiawatha Broadband Communications, and you can find them at www.hbc.com. We're here to provide useful information for those who are coming in for the first time. We're here to provide useful information and insights to help communities, companies, and nonprofit organizations get more, better broadband to everywhere it needs to be in America. Just one little minor housekeeping item. We're not taking call-ins today, but you can join us in the live chat room, and that's happening on the Blog Talk Radio homepage for this show. Jay Ovatore is our online co-host, and he'll be there keeping things lively. So if you have any questions, you know, put them out there, and we'll work with it. I do think you have to register to get an account to participate, but that should be a very simple process. So moving right along here, our guest today is Jory Wolf, who is the CIO for Santa Monica, California. Welcome, Jory, and thanks for being a guest today on Gigabit Nation.
Welcome, and thank you, Craig.
I've been to Santa Monica a few times, but I have to say it is definitely a very nice place to hang out. It is nestled there between L.A. and the Pacific Ocean, so there's all these great views and so forth. And just a little tourist plug, if you get an opportunity to get to California, definitely stop by the Santa Monica Pier.
It is the end of Route 66 for any of those interested.
Yes. That's right. I remember that now. You know, many times people, when we're talking about broadband, you know, they talk about its potential impact in rural communities. But I think folks overlook the fact that there are many urban areas that don't have good broadband. And so I think that, you know, we should probably start by talking about what was Internet connectivity like before you started this network project.
It was pretty dismal, Craig. We had a shoestring network that connected 32 facilities through our local CLEC. We used Verizon, and we used a combination of DSL connections. And for those locations that had more staff, upwards of 50 or more, we used T1s and bonded T1s. The cost for our network to 32 facilities was staggering. We were paying close to $1.2 million a year for both voice and data communications. And, of course, when we were growing our network for data, we found that we had servers scattered all over the place. So maintenance was a nightmare, and there was no way we were ever going to get to best practiced IT.
Interesting. So I remember once I did an interview of you for one of my broadband snapshot reports, and you said that, you know, we didn't have much analysis to do because it was pretty clear you were paying a lot for little and you needed to find a better way. And so it sounds like that indeed was the case, right? I mean, it was pretty clear cut that you had the need.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think every municipality has the need. If you have over 25,000 residents, you have the need. And I'll get into that in a little bit later in this interview. But we realized that if we were going to be on the information superhighway, and that's what it was called, believe it or not, in 1998, we needed to do something, and we needed to do something quickly. We were responding, really, to the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and that act enabled us to manage time, place, and manner for those who were constructing within the community, constructing telecommunications in the community. And it also allowed us to regulate the cable cos. So we had the ability, of course, to reach out to the third-party fiber providers at the time, and the cable companies, and you know, research with them what they could possibly do for building out a network for the city. And what started it all was we got a negative response, and then it all changed from there.
So how do you mean?
Well, we found that the companies were coming into Santa Monica, but they were only interested in cherry-picking the best businesses. And they really had no interest in serving the local government entity or even any public institutions of any kind. So the city, the school district, and the college were, of course, paying extremely high rates for extremely low bandwidth technologies. And we didn't see that the future was going to be any brighter. And since Verizon said no, and at the time it was Adelphia Cable, they said no, we felt that we had to take the bull by the horns. And what we did was we started a telecommunications master planning effort. And in 1999, we had symposiums, workshops, and we even had a local conference here for the western region within Southern California, hosting other cities and experts in this field, including our council members. And as a result of that, we got everyone to buy into a written document, a master plan that was a blueprint for us to follow for the next decade. Mm-hmm. And that was adopted by council in May of 2000.
Well, that's interesting that you face that particular barrier, because Santa Monica isn't it isn't in a sparsely populated area. I mean, there's 80,000 folks there. As I remember it, I don't think it's even particularly high in well, let me rephrase it. There aren't a lot of low-income areas or blight or any of the types of things where when people think that a provider is going to refuse to bring in service, they're usually, you know, it's usually like the typical, there aren't enough people making enough income and there aren't enough people in enough, you know, close enough space. But you really don't have that there in Santa Monica. I mean, you're a fairly urban area.
We are an urban area, and Santa Monica, even back then, was a very attractive community. It had a lot of different niche businesses, but I think we were focused, we were transitioning, I should say, and we still had a lot of light manufacturing. We actually even had some large manufacturing development space. We had Papermate was here. Of course, we still had the Douglas plant at the Santa Monica Airport that was left over from World War II.
Whoa.
some really old institutions that really and industries that didn't really demand the kinds of broadband that we're talking about in that day. Of course, nowhere near what we're needing today. Also at the time, the city started a redevelopment effort, and that effort really resulted in development agreements that really transformed the landscape of Santa Monica, for starting from probably 1997 and through to today. And that transformation has been to larger commercial structures, certainly more density everywhere, and actually the positioning of Santa Monica as being a tech coast or a Silicon Beach. We have now a large number of entertainment companies and new media businesses that are flocking to Santa Monica as a result of that growth that was started in 1997.
Right. So that was a good 8-9 years before you guys finally took the bull by the horns in a serious way. So it was definitely a city making progress, and it seems surprising that you guys would have been ignored in the way that you were. So clearly you decided to turn things around. But in 2006, as I remember, there wasn't a budget for a fiber network or a major broadband project. And I think it would really be interesting to just, you know, let you describe how you approached the city council and use some creativity to move this thing forward.
Well, it was an interesting story. Actually, it's something that can be used by any municipality. There's nothing unique about Santa Monica, I believe, that that makes us different from anyone else. Anyone can do this. Basically, we took all of our telecommunications funds and we pulled them together from all of the departments, and we have 12 different departments and 66 divisions within the city. We are full service with our own police and fire, airport and transit. That gave us about $1.4 million of funds, and we were paying Verizon at the time about $1.3 million. We realized that we were going to continue to pay Verizon upwards of $1.3 million and with annual increases if we didn't do something about it. I think others didn't invest in Santa Monica because Verizon had such a chokehold on this community. They had pretty much what looked like a monopoly in the day. AT&T wasn't here then. They still have very little presence now. Third-party providers came in, started construction, started picking up some companies here and there, but then left town and left a mess in their wake. And so we felt that we needed to build it ourselves. And we started with trying to get a payback, of course, to be able to reuse the any savings that we might generate from having our own assets. And what we did, I got together with the school district and the college and said, hey, you probably have the same situation we do, and you know your future looks dim when it comes to not only what you're going to pay, but what you're going to get for that money. Because it's extremely expensive. Back then, Verizon was charging $3,500 a month for a 10-meg connection. So imagine the barriers that we had if we were going to try to use our local carrier, and imagine without any other competition. And remember, the cable cos in the day really weren't in the fiber business then for broadband. They were it was cable modem service and it was video programming in that day. Mm-hmm. So we really felt that without any competition, we needed to build it ourselves. So we took that pool of money, wrote an MOU with the school district and the college, pulled that money together, and renegotiated our franchise agreement with Adelphia Cable and said, build us an INET for 51 city, school district, and college facilities. And what that immediately did was everyone netted a savings because we had now a fiber asset, and we got rid of all those leased circuits that we were all paying for to Verizon, and then pocketed the money and bought optical gear and operated the fiber network from Adelphia Cable, which eventually became Time Warner, at a very low cost. I paid $530,000 for Adelphia to build it for the school district and the college as well as the city. And they never did pay me back, but they didn't have to. They paid their fair share of the maintenance on the electronics gear, for purchase of the electronics gear, and also for operations and maintenance of the fiber optics for what we called, affectionately called, our own INET. And in putting the MOU together, I did some internal work too, and I got all of my department heads give me their budgets for telecommunications ongoing, so it wasn't a one-time thing. It was ongoing, and I got my finance director, my CFO, and I got my city manager and council to all agree that the money would be mine in IT, and any savings that I would have would be treated as a capital project and rolled over from year to year. So in the first year, I saved $250,000, and in subsequent years, I got that up to $500,000. I'm now saving, of the $1.3 million, I'm now saving almost $700,000 a year. And imagine over the course of the last, here we are, almost 9 years of this program, I have a substantial amount of funds accumulated to continue to build out a fiber optic network and to provide other amenities in the areas of broadband for the community.
Right, right. So the crux of it was the deal that you were able to strike with city council to, in essence, control your funds, and you made it basically no cost to them because it was, you know, you're basically saying, here's money that we're spending, now let's save it and then redirect it into a better infrastructure that will help not only the local government, but will also help some of the constituents, the college and the school district. And, you know, as I'm listening to this, you know, one thing that kind of comes to mind here is that do cities and communities in general really understand the impact on the local economy if their government is running more efficiently? I mean, you're talking about a huge dollar amount that's being spent. So if you can save or redirect that money, that ultimately will have some sort of economic impact or ripple effect across the community, won't it?
Oh, absolutely. There are immediate service impacts, improvements, I should say. And then there's, of course, the benefit for being able to implement new technologies. So we scrapped all of those, you know, remote servers all over the place, and we were able to build best practice IT technologies and practices here. Everything was collapsed into an optical ring with 5 data centers, with virtualization in the data center, and also redundant, you know, networks. And this was for everybody. And of course, we were able to start implementing new technologies for traffic signal synchronization, putting our traffic signals on our network, real-time parking advisory signs in our parking structures in the downtown and in the beach lots. Things like public safety security video on our promenade and our parking lots and our parking structures and on the pier. Mm-hmm. And that continues to grow to security systems in all of our public facilities. Wireless parking meters, directional signage, AVL for all of our government vehicles. As well as wireless hot zones, and now that's spreading into wireless commercial corridors throughout the city for not only, you know, government use and lowering the cost of our, you know, needing broadband services that are leased, but also for improving livability in the community, improving mobility, improving the experience for residents, visitors, and especially people who are doing business in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I actually have a couple of questions from the audience, which I want to get to in a minute, but I wanted to sort of wrap this up kind of neatly here. In my book, Fighting the Next Good Fight, for community broadband, I talk extensively about justifying the cost of building a network that is owned in part or in whole by the community. And I say how you justify that is to first use a network to address local government's various communication needs. Now, it sounds like, you know, pretty much what you've done. So how should cities go about determining if this approach is best for them? Like, what factors in your mind, you know, if I'm a city saying, okay, well, we should look at, you know, our costs and then determine if that justifies this network. But what factors really are you looking for to, you know, put this maybe on a fast track to actually move forward?
Well, there has to be a benefit for the community, and there has to be a gap that's being filled. I don't believe that it's government's role to compete with the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
It's government's role to prime the pump so others invest in the community, as we do with commercial spaces and with buildings and with you know, other private asset and development. But we shouldn't directly compete. So we have not gone into the residential space because Verizon and Time Warner Cable are providing services that are fairly competitive, although we'd like to see more, and are reliable. So there's really nothing to fix there.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to get Verizon to build out Fios for our community, and we were able to get Time Warner to improve their fiber infrastructure for video programming and delivery of triple play. So we did see, though, a tremendous gap and void for our businesses. And we felt that, okay, this is something we need to do something about. If people aren't, if telcos aren't going to come to Santa Monica, we have to give them reason to come there has to be something to serve the businesses that are coming to Santa Monica to fill these beautiful commercial spaces that we were building because of our redevelopment efforts. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't have the broadband, those buildings were going to be empty.
Right. So let me, I want to get this one question in, and then we'll get full into the discussion on economic development. One of the members of the audience asked, is this similar to what Washington, D.C. did in terms of, and make sure I'm asking this question the right way, using a franchise agreement to get to some dark fiber? So I'm guessing that means using a franchise agreement as a way to access additional dark fiber besides what the city owns.
Yes, it's identical. We used our renegotiations of our cable franchise with Adelphia Cable at the time to build the INET, which was dark fiber, which was six strands of fiber in the loop, and also six strands in every lateral off. There were five hubs in the loop, but six strands for every lateral off of one of those five hubs to every one of the facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the model that we used, although that is not a model that's available to most municipalities in the state of California, and I would imagine in some other states around the nation, because local franchise authority has been moved from the municipal government to the state level.
Then how does that affect people wanting to move forward then from this juncture? I mean, if other cities want to do, well, in California, you know, if other cities in California want to do what Santa Monica has done, then what's their option?
Well,
or do they have an option?
For Santa Monica, we went to our local cable company and said, here's $530,000, build it for us. For other municipalities, since we were renegotiating our franchise, we had some leverage with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we did pay a fair rate, and if we were to have someone else build it, it probably would have cost more because the plant may not have existed. But either way, if you invest in building it for your own government use first and for your public agencies, and if you can structure it so that you can reuse those savings, then you can build a parallel network, which is what we did, for our community at large, especially for our business sectors.
Interesting. Okay. So let's talk about the economic impact. Number one, what are the businesses getting access to? So if one person asked me, do they get a gigabit, which is what I saw in a press release back in August, I think it was, or can they get up to 10 gigabits? Because that's the full-on capacity of your network, right, is 10 gigabits?
Yeah, the price points really, it doesn't work until you need 100 meg.
Mm-hmm.
And at 100 meg, it's very reasonable, and it's extremely reasonable as you go higher.
Mm-hmm.
We have, the majority of our customers are using 100 meg. Many of them are using 1 gig, and then there are, I would say, about 5% that are using 10 gig.
Whoa.
We have a couple 10 gig times 2 for redundancy, and as we continue to build out our redundancy, we're seeing more and more companies wanting to have redundant services themselves because we have multiple dual paths for our network. Also, they're interested in other services that we're looking at providing in the future, and that would be colo and also access to colo outside of the region, such as Scottsdale or Phoenix and Las Vegas.
Okay. So now, what are some of the ways the network is impacting the local economy?
Well, we started with dark fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that there were a number of entertainment companies that needed the dark fiber. The first company that came to us actually was Google, and they wanted to know what kind of fiber infrastructure we had. Interestingly, I do need to clarify, we did not have an electric utility here in Santa Monica, and we still don't. If your municipality has an electric utility, you may not need someone to build it for you like we needed Adelphia to build it for us for the iNet initially, because your electric utility will have an abundance of fiber connecting all of its assets throughout most of the city. And I would imagine many of those are going to be positioned in the areas that you need it, such as your downtown and other business parks. But getting back to the question, I think that after a while we realized that dark fiber wasn't enough, that it was too expensive for many of our businesses. We were leaving too many businesses in the dark, so to speak, because at the rate the rate for dark fiber is much greater, because you're giving up a valuable asset. Instead, what we did was we looked at expanding our program into lit services, and when we did that, we were able to scale it, and we were able to then come up with the programs for 100 meg, 1 gig, multiple 1 gigs, or 10 gig and multiple 10 gigs. Mm-hmm. And that's worked out very well. We have found that not only were, as the word got out through some of our marketing campaigns, businesses flocked to us and said, oh, God, not only is this affordable, but it's more reliable. It's not in the air. It's not on telephone poles like many of much of the fiber that you see. It's all underground. We built it all underground, and it's redundant too. We've got multiple paths now into buildings and into our city. We have found that when the property management companies and property owners of large office complexes heard about this, they also came on board and they said, wait, we want our buildings connected because we want to be on net. We find that it's an asset that our tenants are looking for, mm-hmm. not only our existing tenants, but future tenants. They're looking for where the fiber is. So if our buildings are on net, our building is more valuable, our office space is more valuable. And we found for economic development purposes that those buildings on net, that space is going for a higher rate, is attracting a higher-end technology company or entertainment company, and is they're all full.
Wow.
They're leased.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
And as that word gets around town, more and more are going on net, even though they don't even have customers yet. They don't have a tenant yet.
So in this case, you're not even taking an active role in getting your developers to incorporate broadband. They're seeing the opportunity on their own and just jumping on it with both feet.
Well, that is how it is today, but that's not how it started. We started with, I reached out to my public works director, and I reached out to my economic development director and my planning director. And with Public Works, I got them to agree that whenever they were in the ground, they would allow me to tag along, and I would put conduit in the ground, saving tremendous amounts of public money in constructing this parallel network for businesses. And I got my economic development director to spread the word and to allow me to sit on our business alliance and to sit on our Chamber of Commerce. And that, of course, got the word out and got me to work with some very important community stakeholders, but also some very important property management companies and property owners within the community. And then I worked with my planning director and got her to agree for all of her planners when they were negotiating development agreements that there was going to be a Santa Monica SM CityNet vault that was going to be built at that development site, so that we had access to those buildings and we'd be able to provide SM CityNet broadband to that new development at lower costs. We wouldn't have to be constructed after the fact. And all three of those strategies have worked very well. But now that the word is out, the word itself is really even as effective as those three strategies were in the beginning.
That's very interesting. I have often wondered, if indeed once you get the network in place and then you start talking to people about it and you get your first couple of customers, that the need is so pent up, there's so, and in such a degree that it's like an almost an explosion of interest because people have been waiting for this, and all you need is one or two people to start talking about it, and it just kind of, you know, snowballs from there.
There's that, but there's also a lot of competition, as anyone who's involved in leasing commercial space.
Yes.
So imagine how that's playing. Is your building on net? No, it's not on net yet, but I'm putting it on net. And there was a race to see which property management company or which property large property owner was going to get their buildings on net first. Now, I'm not saying they're all on yet, but there has been a race to the finish line, and it's been very interesting to watch. Something that people recognize is a valuable asset for commercial space. Of course, the businesses agree with that and are telling the property owners and the property managers that this is a must-have, and that you may have beautiful buildings and it may be in a lovely seaside community and you may have all these nice restaurants, but if you don't have broadband at affordable rates and if you don't have redundancy, that's not good enough.
Right. Now, at this stage, 2011, does your economic development director specifically include broadband in the plan, in like their economic development plan itself? And what I mean by that is, I mean, you always have a plan for economic development. We plan to do this, we plan to do, you know, Y, so forth and so on. But is broadband like a component of their economic development plan, do you know?
It was not up to about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was very frustrating for me. But over the course of the last 3 years, as people kept coming to them and asking where the fiber was, where's your fiber maps? Can you tell us, you know, who at Verizon we need to talk to? Is AT&T in town? What about Level 3 and Cogent? And who else can we talk to? They realized that they needed to make this part of their plan. And it was there was an effort in Santa Monica over the course of the last 3 years to make ourselves more business friendly. Santa Monica, the government of Santa Monica, had a reputation of not being business friendly. It was very difficult to get development agreements through, and the tenant improvement projects just labored on for protracted periods of time. And with the change in council's philosophy and with some change in executive directors and staff, we of course, went about trying to correct that. And then so we formed this partnership with the chamber called the Business Alliance, and that was through our Economic Development Department. And they spearheaded it and got our building and safety official, myself, representing broadband, and other strategic representatives of city government to sit with businesses, to sit with property owners, and to meet with brokers, commercial property brokers, to strategize how we can attract more businesses and how we can use any of these assets to do that. Interestingly, we found that broadband was the silver bullet. And I'll give you a little story.
Go ahead, please.
There was a very large employer in the city of Santa Monica, and they employ 900 employees here locally. It's a gaming company, a global gaming company, and they were considering leaving Santa Monica for more office space and a location where it wouldn't be this costly to build. They came to their brokers, and their brokers and this company came to city management and asked our city manager, what can you do for us? Can you lower our taxes? Can you speed our permitting processes? Can you lower our permit fees and other kinds of government reductions for fees mostly, and for taxes. And of course, my city manager is saying, well, this isn't obviously good for our community. I can't lower your taxes. I can't lower your permit fees. If I did it for you, I'd have to do it for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can look at streamlining our permitting processes, but that's going to take a long time. But hey, I can give you broadband at affordable rates, and I can give it to you up to rates speeds of 10 gig. Do you want that? And they were all heirs, and they stayed.
Okay. So this brings up a question actually by me and by several people in the audience, which is legal issues, right? Because this tends to be the quicksand that gets a lot of communities in trouble, is they have all kinds of legal issues. There are challenges, and I think you've dodged almost all of those, and one of the few cities that does. I know one question that was very specific had to do with, let me pull it up here. Let's see. Were you having obstacles dealing with MDU laws and regulations, meaning there are certain things that you can and cannot do to get customers' services exclusively by another provider?
No, we haven't really had any problems with that, and one of the things I haven't shared with you yet, Craig, is that we're partnering, and we're agnostic when it comes to who we'll do business with. We are not disabling others from investing in Santa Monica. We are not competing with them directly. In fact, we're enabling them. So many of the third-party fiber providers are actually using SM CityNet fiber, and they are reselling our fiber, providing their niche services, or extending our fiber with their fiber to reach businesses in Santa Monica. And I think it's been extremely valuable to them, and I don't see that they see it as threatening. The other interesting thing is that we believe that Verizon is shuttering its doors for its Verizon business here in Santa Monica. And so there's this newly formed void that we feel that we're filling, not only with ourselves, but with these third-party fiber providers. And so we're enabling them to, and with our activities, we're filling that void. Ultimately, I think what will end up happening is in about 5 years, most of the large national wireless companies are going to be disbanding their fiber and their landline businesses, because everything's going mobile and wireless. Mm-hmm. And wireless services, with the advent of 4G and then future improvements in wireless, we're going to see wireless in the home being distributed over wireless networks. We're going to see wireless on the go to greater extents. We're already seeing video on smartphones and tablets and the like. And I believe that there is the market is moving to the consumer gadget niche. And I think that less and less people are going to be using landlines in their home, because more and more people, as we know, are letting go of landlines and are moving to cell phones and tablets. And just like that's how that's worked with copper, I think the same thing is going to work its way through with fiber.
Well, I would guess that I see where the market is moving toward more mobile applications and people wanting to do more. I also look at the fact that companies like AT&T and Verizon are having difficulties getting that much traffic across their networks, and so they're trying to find ways to dump it onto Wi-Fi networks. And I read an article a couple of weeks ago that either Verizon or AT&T, I forget which, is thinking about how they can structure things so they can charge for that Wi-Fi, which, you know, scares a lot of people who are used to being able to go to an internet cafe. But the bottom line being is that the wireless has an inherent ceiling of capability. And yes, mobility is key. I want to be able to do some X number of tasks while I'm mobile. But at some point, we are still going to need, I'm assuming, capabilities and speeds faster than what wireless on its best day is going to be able to deliver. Don't you think, or did you see it differently?
Well, I believe that with the improvements in wireless over the next 3 to 5 years, I see it differently.
Okay.
But what I do see during that period of time and beyond, I see people who need 30 meg or more not being served by wireless over the course of the next 5 years or after 5 years. And so businesses are the ones that are, I think, going to be hurt most by this. So there still is, and I'm not saying there isn't, there still is a need outside of the consumer marketplace. For the business marketplace, there's still going to be a need for fiber. And businesses are going to need, they're going to thrive on fiber, and those without will probably pass away. And that's what we're attempting to do, is as the carriers and the CLECs are focusing their attention on the volume in the consumer marketplace using wireless, we're coming up behind and filling in for their retreat from the fiber niche.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I can see where that makes sense. Just a note out to our listeners today, if you want to throw some questions in here for Jory or myself to answer, you do need to log on with a Blog Talk Radio account, I believe, which is a pretty simple process. Otherwise, I mean, you obviously say keep listening, and we will entertain questions from those folks who are currently sending us some questions. I want to shift just a little bit to talk about what does the community have to do, or what does the owner of the network, whether we're talking city only, or a public-private partnership, what does that entity driving the network have to do to ensure that there are economic impacts? And as an example, what I mean by this, so a phrase that gets used these days frequently is economic gardening. So in Pulaski, Tennessee, they have a municipal broadband network, and one of their objectives is to increase the number of home-based entrepreneurs and help them grow their businesses. So the local government works with different organizations to help them provide services such as, you know, teaching basic accounting skills or business management consulting services in order to help those people that get the access to take advantage of it, to maximum effect. In Seattle, they were talking about providing fiber access services to the businesses there, but realize a lot of the business owners aren't tech savvy. So if you're going to have an economic impact, it seems like you have to do more than just build a network and turn it on and put up a for sale sign.
It's very interesting you bring this up, Craig, because we were just talking about it this morning in one of our strategy sessions. Believe it or not, we're finding more and more, and we're quite shocked at this, but we're finding more and more that these companies don't have the expertise to run these high-speed networks, and we're trying to put together now an adjunct to our program that would provide services for these companies, and it would be, a remote hands. It might possibly be consulting services for building, best practice or designing, reliable and secure networks. And also we might even have possibly opening up a help desk for networking services and troubleshooting beyond our network. For example, this morning we had a 1 gig customer go down And this is the second time that they've been down. Of course, we responded within 10 minutes. We were on site. And we troubleshot our network and realized it had nothing to do with our network, and quickly realized that the company, well, after we exchanged some information with the company, which they shouldn't even have shared with my technicians in the first place, we were able to get on their network and realize someone had added a wireless access point and a router that had a conflicting IP address with their firewall.
Mm-hmm.
And so things just as simple as that. You know, if we're going to be providing these services, and if we really want this to work for our community, either these businesses have to have an IT staff, or we're going to need to provide those services to them in some sort of consulting or contractual fashion. The other thing that we're looking at attempting to do with broadband, and we're starting in the wireless arena, is to, we have a program called Buy Local here. And so we're promoting local businesses who participate in our Buy Local program. They get some perks. We've developed a website for them. There's a direct online directory for business to business and residents to buy local. We have recently launched advertising on our Wi-Fi hot zones. We have we currently have 27 Wi-Fi, large Wi-Fi hot zones throughout the city, outdoor hot zones. And we're now implementing Wi-Fi on four very long commercial corridors throughout the city. And we'll be adding more commercial corridors as we go.
Mm-hmm.
But advertising local businesses, promoting the Buy Local program on our Wi-Fi, we think is going to be, it's going to go a long way for helping businesses, and to think of them as community stakeholders and treat them as long-term partners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a very smart way to go. I mean, you are thinking in many respects outside of the box. I think when we consider government services, we expect that there will be, you know, this service or that service, and it's kind of in a controlled structured process. You go somewhere and wait in line, you send in some paperwork, and you wait for someone to get back to you. But this sounds like really roll up the sleeves and get into the trenches, not obviously to run people's businesses, but to be a support vehicle, which I think is more proactive than we typically expect from governments, and in a very positive way in this case. Interesting.
I believe, yeah, it has to be a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make it simple. We need to make it simple for these businesses to be able to use these services. We were quite surprised that some of these businesses, even in corporate offices, don't have the IT talent that we expect them to.
Well, it sounds like one more niche, and you guys are in a position to facilitate the filling of it. And, you know, actually, I have another question kind of along this vein of, you know, value-added services and exceeding expectations. Your network is run by your IT department, is it not?
Yes, that's correct.
I think in most corporations even, there is not this expectation that the IT staff, I mean, they're considered to be good at technology, but they're not considered to be good at business issues. Whereas you guys are building a business and, you know, creating a product line, if you will, of services, and you're marketing this thing because, you know, you got a steady flow of businesses coming in and so forth, and it's all your IT staff. I mean, did you do something special? Did you send them out for MBAs? I mean, how were you able to go against norm and come up with a group that's running a pretty sharp business operation?
That's an interesting question. I might have to, you know, give you the full answer in a few days after I ponder it further. But my first reaction to that is they are so excited, I have to use the word jazz, about this program and being part of it and about being entrepreneurial and about servicing the business community and coming out of the closet, you know, the back office and being in the forefront and directly serving the community with all the things that I mentioned earlier, like AVL and real-time parking signage and synchronized traffic signals and transit priority holding light green for signals and all the other things we do with Wi-Fi hot zones. And the public goes, we love this. And the council goes, we love this. And every time we're in a magazine or there's a council meeting and there's more technology that comes up and they see council through our video archive of the meeting, they see council talk about how great our IT staff is and how forward-thinking we are and about all the wonderful things that we do for this community. It's like injecting them with, you know, with drugs. Then they just can't get enough of it.
So they are enjoying this new role because this is probably much more exciting than what they originally signed on for.
Well, they still have their other responsibilities.
Right, I know they don't give it
but,
to that.
But we've implemented some really good technologies through the savings of, you know, we haven't just continued to build this for our external services. We've used the funds to improve the way that we operate, which has improved our efficiencies, which has allowed us to focus more time on some of these external things. But yes, they like it a lot. I might even agree with you that they like it better than what they do traditionally.
Coming on over to the wild marketing side of life.
Yeah.
Now you have a wireless network, which is a key part of this picture, both for the government side and the business use side, as does Chattanooga, who we had on the show last week. And now, are you, number one, doing smart grid stuff with that? And is indeed the wireless a part of the economic picture of, you know, what you're trying to achieve?
Well, the wireless is definitely part of it. It's all part of the broadband program. We're not just a fiber, well, we're not a utility yet, but we kind of act as if we were. We're not just a fiber utility. We are actually either one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's whatever service we feel we need to provide. For example, when I speak of all of these government applications that we use, one point is an example for our transit priority system, holding the light green when a bus is coming to the intersection and granting priority for that mass transit vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Half of that's built on wireless. And when you talk about bringing broadband to a particular building, we, you know, many of these buildings are fairly large, and they have open spaces in them that are to be used by, of course, people who visit the property, but also by the public. And so we're Wi-Fiing those commercial corridors, we're Wi-Fiing those commercial centers, and we're making we're improving further the value of the asset. Doesn't just have broadband for the businesses inside the buildings or along the corridors. It's actually wireless, in a sense, also an alternative form of broadband for people who visit and work in that space.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the smart grid part? I know that I saw in one of your notes to me earlier that you have something going on in that regard.
We are using it right now for monitoring all of our meters for the city, and these are water quality meters, so they're pumping stations and the like. We are in the process of rolling out wireless meter reading devices, so all of our meters, water meters, will be wireless, which means we'll be able to have in a sense, smart grid for our water utility, which will allow them to the residents and businesses to monitor their consumption on a real-time basis. And,
okay,
of course, work toward sustainability and energy conservation.
Great. That's interesting. We got about 5 minutes left, but in our time that's left, I want to actually ask a couple of questions that will be on my survey that goes out. Like I said, Economic Development Professionals, it's our annual national survey. And by the way, for our listening audience, if you want to participate in the survey, you should go to my website, www.cjspeaks.com. And I believe there's a link from the station. But in any event, if you go to my website, there'll be all the details on the survey. One of the questions I'm going to be asking this year is, can communities use broadband to increase entrepreneurialism among their constituents? And I mean, I know that you in Santa Monica don't sell service to residential areas, which would kind of affect maybe the home-based businesses. But typically we talk about broadband and we talk about what it does to draw in new businesses, new companies, and we talk about how it deals with existing companies. But can you see a way where that network actually inspires people and the city can kind of help along that, you know, people wanting to start their own business?
Well, we have models of that here already, even though we don't reach out to the residential sectors of the community.
Mm-hmm.
On some of the periphery of our business, our business sectors, and in the downtown and other business parks, we have more affordable office space. And those office spaces are now being turned into incubators for small entrepreneurial businesses. And we're providing broadband at affordable rates for those businesses to flourish and to incubate within these complexes, which provide a place for them to, of course, work, but also a place, general meeting quarters for them to share ideas with other businesses that are either working on similar projects or can actually establish partnerships to benefit one another.
Okay. So let me ask this question. In one or two points, quickly, what would be your, advice to others? What are the two things they need to do to make their broadband network an effective economic development tool?
Well, it has to be tied into your economic development department. It has to be part of their strategy. It needs to be, in their DVDs that they send out to prospective companies and to brokers. And there needs to be an ongoing dialogue about how broadband can be used for business, and it needs to be promoted. We've had some really good success in putting some promotional materials together with our Business Alliance. We have some very creative people here in Santa Monica, and we generated what's called a passport to Santa Monica. And it's about a 35-page brochure. It's fairly small. It's about the size of a small personal telephone directory. And it has everything about the benefits in Santa Monica that are there to serve existing and new businesses. And broadband is profiled to a great extent within that document. So I think those are the key elements. I think it's to partner with the business stakeholders. It's to make sure it's part of your economic development plan. It needs to be part of your development agreements, and it needs to be highly publicized and promoted.
Okay. And my last question before we wrap, last question. Is it true you guys have 200 different companies providing services like ISPs and the like? Or that number, I got the wrong number from somewhere.
What we did was we built a connection to the largest local point of presence for the Internet here in Southern California, which is in downtown Los Angeles, called One Wilshire. And there at One Wilshire, there are 200 ISPs. So the companies that use our services, our transport services, through Lit Service and WDM technologies, they have access to that competitive group of companies. So we've been able to lower their costs for bandwidth significantly through bundling of our customers to acquire reductions and discounts, and also for them to directly competitively bid out those services.
Great. We're going to have to wrap. I want to thank you, Jory, for your time. This has been extremely informative, and I really, really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sure. We may do this again one day. I want to thank our sponsor, Hiawatha Broadband Communications, and also our media sponsors, GigaOhm, MuniWireless.com, and Broadband Communities Magazine. And thanks, too, to Jay Overtore for being my online co-host and keeping everything running smoothly. Thank you all very much in the audience, and come back and check out next week's show. Our Monday show will have Howard County, Maryland, one of the broadband stimulus winners. So it's going to be an enlightening show for everybody to check out. Thank you, and have a great day.